Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Back in the Jeff Cockett Show, let's do this Chris Harrington thing.
Now, it's Chris Harrington on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show, presented by Church Health, caring for people all around us. Give today at churchhealth.org.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's the homie Olivia Rodrigo with Deja Vu in honor of tonight's Grizzlies Warriors game, which, as I wrote today, is a lot of similarities to one from the past.
2014. What were the circumstances?
It was a Tuesday night on national television at FedEx Forum. The Grizzlies had gone 19-4 in their previous 23 games. The Warriors had the best record in the NBA. One of the teams had the longest active winning streak in franchise history. And Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson were on the floor.
So that Grizzlies team, what had they done the previous year? What was that the year that they...
The previous year they'd gone to the conference finals.
I see. The previous year was they're coming off the losing, getting swept by the Spurs in the conference finals.
And then, I believe this is right, and then this is the year they had a rematch with the Warriors in the playoffs in the second round. It was that year.
They had Portland in the first round
and then Golden State in the second round.
It was the broken face. It was a
Golden State's first title. This is on the road to Golden State's first title.
And I have no memory of this game. The Grizzlies won it.
It was actually, I didn't get into this in the column, but I could extend the parallel because, this is a big week for the Grizzlies in terms of this homestand.
Right, yeah.
Well, this was not a homestand, but this was also, I went back and found my pick and pop column from the CA at the time, and I wrote about this big week. The very next night after this game in 2014, the next night they went to San Antonio, the defending champion Spurs, I believe, went to San Antonio and won that triple overtime game.
With Marks.
Mark hit the 1-foot three-pointer to force overtime. And Zach, that was the next night. So when I did that column a couple years ago in the 20 greatest regular season games, both those games were on it.
Where do you think the Grizzlies were in the play? Where in the standings then? The Grizzlies were?
They were second.
They were second.
It was the two best teams in the NBA. This was I may have mentioned this yesterday. I don't remember. But I went back and tried to find it, and I could find the page for it, but the audio was completely missing. Zach Lowe, it was Grantland at the time, he did a podcast in the lead up that was all about the two hottest teams in the NBA, the Warriors and the Grizzlies. And the first half of it was Ethan Strauss on the Warriors, and the second half of it was me on the Grizzlies.
It never felt like, it's funny because I have a hard time remembering this team being second. That team being
second.
We have
such recency bias. It's like, I know, is this the greatest it's ever been? They were 19-4. They started the season 19-4.
I guess what I was going to say was that we imagine with this team that there is a higher ceiling, right? With this team, that always felt like it was a lower ceiling team. But yeah, they were. I mean,
They just come off the conference finals. They started the next season 19-4.
That's a pretty damn good team. Yeah.
Right.
Well, some fascinating things about it. Who led the way for the Grizzlies in that game as they beat the Warriors? Same group.
Yeah, it was the same group. No one had some huge individual game, but it was, I believe, because I had this on my notes, I don't think I included it in the column. Mark and Zach combined for 41, and I believe Steph and Klay combined for 40.
I see. So as you pointed out in the column, and I touched on this earlier in the opening segment, it's fascinating because here we are again, and from both sides, remarkable that the Warriors are back with the same core, just as remarkable that the Grizzlies are back having rebuilt completely. Both of those things are each individually remarkable.
Yeah, as I wrote, I think it's a dual testament to the two franchises that we found ourselves back in this place, in this way.
Which is more surprising?
Maybe it's the Warriors, just because we don't see this anymore. They are the Spurs model. The Spurs model of, Parker, Ginobili, Duncan. Of having this core players together for a decade and being, because the Spurs weren't like, the Spurs didn't make five finals in a row the way that Warriors team did. And so there was a up and down. They won, I think, five over the course of the Tim Duncan years, but it wasn't like all in a row. Like they would pop up and they would pop back down a little bit and they'd pop back up. And and that's what this Warriors team has done. It had the five finals in a row, and then it was out of the playoffs for 2 years, and now who knows if they'll get back to the finals, but they're in that position again.
It feels like Milwaukee, obviously it hasn't been as long, but like that model can work in Milwaukee too, right? I mean, you've got Giannis, you got Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday as a hang around. And I do think it gives, you said you hope that, you wonder if Ja and Jaren and Dez will be looking over to see what's possible if you hang together. but that obviously is the model that the Grizzlies should aspire to.
Yeah.
Also, you make the point that when they met in 2014, very different teams. Now that they meet, still different teams, but the Grizzlies have sort of an equivalent piece to each of those three pieces.
Yeah, the positions match up. You got, a point guard, a scoring guard, and a combo big. It's the three best players on each team. It would be a little bit different if Dylan Brooks was playing, and it wouldn't be as neat. It'd be a slightly different sort of shape to it. But I think it's an interesting shape. I think not only do you the positions line up, but like it goes beyond that. I mean, Draymond Green and Jaren Jackson, both defense-first players from Michigan State. And you have a little bit of a generational thing where, like, Zach was the older Michigan State guy and Draymond Green was the younger, and now Draymond Green's the older Michigan State guy and Jaren Jackson's the younger. And we've already been making, to some degree or another, Klay Thompson, Desmond Bane comps before they're going to face each other for the first time. And then the Ja Steph thing is just, these might be the starting backcourt of the Western Conference All-Stars, might even be the starting backcourt of the All-NBA team, depending on how the rest of the season goes. And they are two of the, you can count them probably one or two, one hand, maybe two at most exciting players to watch in basketball for totally different reasons.
Right. For totally different reasons, but also even in their differences in the way they play the game, small school guys, small guys, honestly, diminutive in stature. And incredibly, incredibly fun to watch. It does. As you see what the Warriors have accomplished, and they had to add in Kevin Durant for some of it. They still won a title without him.
They won a title without him,
and they set the record without him.
They won a title without him, and then the next year they set the all-time record for wins without him. So they did pretty well without
Kevin Durant. Certainly gilding the lily. But it is interesting, like, of the three Grizzlies who match positionally, what are the odds that any of them will get to be as accomplished as their counterpart on the other side?
Odds are certainly that Desmond Bane is not going to be Klay Thompson. That's the easiest one, I think. The odds are no one's going to be Steph Curry.
Right.
But Ja Morant can be a Hall of Famer. So you're talking about levels of his ceiling is Hall of Fame.
Right. Yeah.
Right. The Draymond Jaren thing is interesting because Jaren's already more of a scorer than Draymond ever was. Like, even struggling this year, he's still 16 points a game. Draymond, I don't think he's ever averaged 16 points a game in a season. Now, Draymond Green is an elite. He may win Defensive Player of the Year this year.
Also Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but he's going to be Hall of Fame because of the team he was on. He's going to be Hall of Fame in a way that some of those Celtics players were Hall of Famers.
If
Draymond Green had played his whole career in Charlotte, he would not be Hall of Famer.
That's exactly
right. And so, I think Jaren in some ways could become a better player all around than Draymond, yes.
Well, and if you want to accomplish the things that the Warriors accomplished, you'll need some of that. And you also, as you point out, you also have Dylan Brooks, in the mix. So what interests you? Dylan Brooks will be missed tonight. Like, he would be a he would be a valuable player to have tonight. Is there particular matchups that interest you tonight?
I just don't know how. Well, I don't know how they're going to match up. That's the thing. Like, we can think of basketball and like point guard versus point guard, but that's not the way the game works.
Of course.
And so I don't know, like, how, like, is Ja Morant going to be guarding Steph Curry? That and seems, if not, what are they going to do? I don't know how. It'll be interesting to see without Dylan Brooks how the Grizzlies decide to go about matching this up. And honestly, they've done it before. I mean, when they beat them early in the season, Dylan Brooks didn't play because he was injured. They won at Golden State in October. So you could go back and look at that game, which I haven't done, and see what they did there. You still have De'Anthony Mountain, but you're not going to be starting him because that's not what you do. I don't want to put, like, Zaire Williams on Steph Curry. Let's avoid that at all costs. And so it'll be interesting to see sort of how they handle things. I mean, I'm just interested in the whole game.
Dylan was instrumental in the playoffs, obviously, last year, in the play-in.
Yeah, he got roasted by Donovan Mitchell, and it was just Donovan Mitchell got hot.
Right.
I mean, there was nothing you could do at that point. He played great defense, and Donovan Mitchell scored anyway. But against Steph Curry, he really, in that play-in game, he got into Steph Curry. He did a good job.
Well, it'll be fun. You also have a column. That column about the about Deja Vu is up at the Daily Memphian. I have tweeted it out.
And comparatively short by my standards.
Comparatively short by your standards.
And totally stat-free. So if you don't want, like, wonky deep-dive basketball, this column is for you.
Practically every week. It's not every week because it's hit or miss occasionally. But we get a reader report. And in the reader report, it's, you know, what stories were most read, what stories had caused people to finally go ahead and subscribe, what stories, whatever. And then there's a category called engagement. And Chris Harrington, it's how long people are in the stories. Chris, this week, there are three stories listed for most engagement. You lead the way with all three. 4:51, 5 minutes, whatever. People, when they read your stuff, they become immersed in it.
I mean,
and that's a good thing, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. People care about this, but I'll have 1,500 readers who read for 3 minutes instead of 6,000 readers for 1 minute.
No, it's basically. Just, well, you brought up that this one was comparatively short by your standards. So the other piece that you have up is, and that you mentioned yesterday that I should have gotten to yesterday, but I missed it, was how the Grizzlies should approach the trade deadline. People are talking about it now. Bobby Marks has a suggested Grizz trade up at ESPN that I'll get to in a moment. But let's start with, in this piece, you outline all the assets the Grizzlies have. We won't do that now.
Yeah, and I should say, in terms of that piece, the lead to that piece is not about trades. It's about how you think about the Grizzlies. And so you could go and read the first part of that and just skip all the trade stuff if you don't care about the trade stuff.
Right. But let's start with some of the big guns. For the longest time, people have been like, maybe the Grizzlies can someday get Bradley Beal. You don't want Bradley Beal anymore.
I think it's not that. I mean, if you just say you have Bradley Beal, like, that'd be cool. But you got to factor in what it costs to get a player and what it costs to keep a player.
Right.
And I think relative to what you would, I don't think Washington's going to trade him. They're saying tell.
Right.
But even if they were, what you would have to give up to get him, and then he can opt out into free agency this summer. You're going to have to give him a max contract. I'm not interested in giving Bradley Beal a max deal that starts at age 29 and carries him forward when I can instead have Desmond Bane for $2 million for the next 2 years and then have a new contract after that.
Right.
I think I'm not saying Desmond Bane is better than Bradley Beal because he is not, but I think he might be better for the Memphis Grizzlies at this point.
Right. Okay. Other big names that you mention, Brandon Ingram, same basic. Well, not the same. He already has his contract. You know, he's not going to be able, but it's a big contract.
It's a big contract. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that he's on the trade market. I mentioned him because it seems like New Orleans needs to figure out something they're trying to do. He's someone I've been interested in the past, but relative to his contract size and relative to sort of thinking about chemistry and fit issues, I don't know if I would risk it. I'd consider it.
It is interesting how it's changed. Over the summer, it felt like Grizzlies fans were, let's go make a big trade to get another piece. Now it's, God, we love this team. Don't disrupt chemistry. Like, the hankering to make a trade has certainly changed over the last few months.
The Grizzlies being awesome has made fake trades a lot less fun.
Yeah, exactly right. So, all right, so the Pacers have talked about breaking up their core, and there are two bigs there, Miles Turner and Sabonis. You're more interested in Sabonis than Turner, but not sure you're interested in either?
Yeah, I just think Sabonis is the better player, period. And I don't – the duplication with Jaren and Miles Turner is interesting. Ultimately, I don't think that's the way you want to go. My only obstacle with Sabonis thing is at some point you have to make choices in terms of where you're deploying resources, and I don't know if I want to put that many resources tilted towards the front court. To me, the idea is when you have Jaren is you're not – you know, if you're going to double up on star-level salaries, you double up on the perimeter. You don't double up in the front court.
Okay, well, speaking of doubling up in the perimeter, Ben Simmons.
I think Ben Simmons, I was skeptical of the Simmons thing. I mean, I remain skeptical in the sense of it being
likely.
Possible or the Grizzlies
right,
even wanting to do it. But the idea of it, I was skeptical of before the season. I'm less skeptical now because of the way players have evolved on the floor. Ja Morant is a better shooter now than he was coming into the season. Jaren Jackson has proven he can anchor a defense at center in a way he hadn't before the season. And once you lock those two things in, suddenly the Ben Simmons thing gets a lot more interesting. Because you worry, if you get Ben Simmons, you worry about, well, he's not a shooter. Well, guess what? Neither is Brandon Clark or Steven Adams, right?
Right.
You worry about, well, yeah, but can, you know, are you too small with him and Jaren together? We're great with Jaren and Brandon Clark, right?
Right.
And so in some ways, Ben Simmons is like a way better Brandon Clark as a like athletic guy at the four who can't shoot, but is a better defender and a better ball handler and a better passer and a better like everything else. And so imagine how well it looks with Ja, Brandon, and Jaren, and now put Ben Simmons in the Brandon Clark spot. I think it's fascinating. I would love to see it as a basketball experiment, but I don't know if it's feasible. A, I don't think you could do it even if you wanted to because you don't have what Philly wants. But then B, the expense of it, because his contract is huge. And then the risk, I didn't get in this column, but the risk in terms of chemistry and locker room stuff. And I just don't know if it's worth the roll of the dice. I think it'd be fascinating to see.
Simmons is on the hook for $35, $38, and $40 million. Ja may have a supermax coming himself.
$200 million contract.
And so you've got that issue. What would you be able to if you were to call them and say, here's the bundle of things I'll give you, Philadelphia.
I didn't do this in the column because it's just too far down the road into hypotheticals that won't happen. But if you want to devise the most realistic scenario that would get this, it would be a three-team deal, not a two-team deal. And it would be the Grizzlies doing a heavily draft pick-oriented deal to some rebuilding team that then sends the star guard. You know, it'd be that kind of thing, right? And so, you know, it would be maybe if Portland wants to blow it up, but they want to really, really blow it up and not like have Ben Simmons on a max contract, then maybe it's Damian Lillard to Philly and Ben Simmons to Memphis, and then like all the draft picks and Zaire Williams and like all of that, you know, to Portland. It'd be more that kind of
thing. In all of these, are you trying to hold on to Desmond Bain? In other words, would you in this theoretical deal be including Desmond Bain in it?
The only trade on the whole column where I say I would deal Desmond Bain is Jaylen Brown.
All right, let's get to Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown is the one you like.
Yes, that's the one I would pursue.
And why
were there?
Why would you pursue the Jaylen Brown one?
Because he is
awesome.
He is a better. I mean, he's not Kawhi Leonard or anything.
Right.
But like, let's be somewhat realistic about Desmond Bain and Dylan Brooks as much as we like them. Jaylen Brown is better. He's better. He's a better all-around player. He's a better defensive player than Desmond Bane. He's a better offensive player than Dylan Brooks, right? It sort of brings the stuff together. He's a better all-around wing. He is about the same age as Dylan Brooks. Even though he's 4 years more experienced, he's less than 2 years older than Desmond Bane. He's already made an all-star team. He's averaging 24 points again. Like he is a established two-way all-star wing who's 25 years old. So, yeah, if I can add that to John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., I'm doing that.
And what would you be prepared to give up?
I don't say this in the column. I mean, I would prefer to do Dylan Brooks and then add the other stuff. And if I have to, I would do Desmond Bane and add the other stuff. There's an argument to just, like, if they want Desmond Bane and Dylan Brooks. Think about the Grizzlies. Think about the worst-case scenario of what you would have to give up. Let's say, and I'm not even saying I would do this, but let's say you give up Desmond Bane and Dylan Brooks, and Kyle Anderson, because you got to match salaries, and three first-round draft picks, right? Right. No one would do this. Everyone listening to this is like, you know, clutching their pearls. Like, you can't do that, right? But imagine if you did that. What's your team look like? Well, at point guard, you got John Brandt and Tyus Jones, just like you do right now.
Right.
In the front court, you got Jaren Jackson, Steven Adams, and Brandon Clark, just like you do right now. You have Jaylen Brown as your primary wing. For the moment, you're surrounding him with De'Anthony Melton, John Conchar, and Zaire Williams, which is pretty good if you already have Jaylen Brown there. And guess what? You were already plus three in first-round draft picks. Now you're just even. You still got like seven first-round draft picks going out, and you can go into free agency. Like, you're in great shape, even if you give up everything other than John Jaren. You're still in great shape. You're good. I mean, this is a great position.
Do you think
Grizzlies
Boston would be interested in?
I wouldn't if I were.
That's the thing. Why would they do it?
No, that's why I don't entertain it that much. If I'm Boston, A, I'm not looking to trade Jaylen Brown. But B, if I am, I'm not looking to trade Jaylen Brown with the centerpiece being another wing player who is not as good as Jaylen Brown. I'm looking for either a similar level player in the backcourt or the front court that pairs with Jason Tatum. That's why I don't take it that seriously.
You then have a whole section on smaller fish that they could go after, and I will urge other people can read that.
If a trade happens, it's going to be one of the things we have not talked about. It's going to be a smaller
deal. Yeah. So the trade that Bobby Marks has, the Grizzlies, trade we would like to see: Kyle Anderson, Brandon Clark, Jarrett Culver, a 2022 first from Utah, 2024 first from Golden State to Detroit. So that's Kyle, Brandon, Jarrett Culver, two firsts for Jeremy Grant, Rodney Magruder, and Luka Garza.
All right, I'm sorry, I got distracted. Say that, do that one more time.
Okay. Kyle Anderson, Brandon Clark, Jarrett Culver, and two firsts, the one from Utah and the one from Golden State, to Detroit for Jeremy Grant, Rodney Magruder, and Luka Garza.
Yeah, Clark and two firsts is too much.
It's too much.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. What I propose a Jeremy Grant trade in the column, too. And what I propose is basically De'Anthony Melton and a first. You know, to me, De'Anthony Melton's equivalent of a first-round draft pick if it's not like a lottery pick anyway. And so to me, Melton and a first, not Clark and two firsts. So.
What are you hunting for this mid-level, like in this category? What are you looking for when you're trading for Jeremy Grant or any of the Cam Reddish or any of the players who you mentioned here?
I'm looking for a player who will be a rotation upgrade beyond this season. And so, you know, Jeremy Grant's under contract for 2 years.
2 years.
Harrison Barnes for 2 years. Reddish for at least 2 years. Eric Gordon, who I mentioned, 2 years. And so in the Eric Gordon case, I think, you know, it adds shooting and playmaking that's more reliable than De'Anthony Melton. And in the Barnes-Grant case, I mean, I love Kyle Anderson, so I'm sort of arguing against myself here. But theoretically, it's a better player than Kyle Anderson. Better shooters, more athletic, better scorers, even though maybe not as good defensively in playmaking, but also under contract. Like with Kyle Anderson, it's sort of like Jonas Valanciunas. Like if you re-sign him this summer, you're going to have to re-sign him for 2, 3, 4 years or whatever, not for one probably. And so those contracts match up, much like Steven Adams does, matches up with.
And it's also to upgrade from, I mean, you already have Dylan and Dez and now Kyle and De'Anthony Melton. It would be upgrading the De'Anthony Melton, Kyle Anderson somewhere in there, basically, is what you're looking to upgrade.
Yes, you're adding, you're trying
more
to raise your ceiling.
More, right.
Not raising the ceiling at the very top of your pecking order, because that's harder to do.
Right.
But you're getting a better, you're turning a sixth man into a fifth man, or a fifth man into a fourth man, that kind of thing.
What do you expect?
I expect they will see if they can do something useful with Jarrett Culver's expiring contract. It is there to be traded. That is the reason it's there. That said, if you don't find a deal to do, you don't do a deal just to do a deal. But the whole reason they kept him was to have that expiring contract as the trade chip. And so I think they'll be looking for something to do there. It would not surprise me. I have no intel on this, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were hunting around for things to do with Anderson or Melton in particular, given just the way the roster has evolved around them and the way they're getting squeezed and the way, and given that Anderson is going to be a free agent this summer. So that wouldn't surprise me. Beyond those three players, anything else I think would surprise me. Even Tyus Jones would surprise me a little bit.
Yeah. You can read both those pieces from Chris at the Daily Memphian. I have tweeted them both out. And we'll talk to him again tomorrow. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Fish on Friday on Tuesday, special Vacation Edition. He's in Sanibel Island. And we'll talk to him coming up next. Jeff Cockett Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
And I'm gonna broadcasting live from the Simmons Bank Studio. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on Memphis's sports station, 92.9 FM ESPN.
I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C. Charles is the author of three New York Times bestsellers. Most recently, One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing and a retired Mississippi tugboat deckhand. He joins me now from the beaches of Sanibel Island in Florida. Charles is a big beach guy. He likes to be out there in his Speedo, baking in the sun. I gather that is like the shell capital of the world, Charles. How is it down there in sunny Sanibel?
Sanibel is really amazing. Yes, it is. It is an island. It's on the west coast of Florida, the Gulf Coast,
yep.
All the way down at the bottom, well south of Tampa, St. Pete, Sarasota, and it is known as like the shell capital of the world. And it's just extraordinary. I actually sent you a picture. I was a kid in Florida. I went to first grade here. I moved here the summer between kindergarten and first grade, and I grew up going to the beach. In the summer, we would often go to the beach two or three times a week. It was 20 minutes from the house, and I certainly collected shells then. But Sanibel is incredible. Like, you step out onto the beach, and they're the most, they're the most beautiful shells you've ever found personally, if you don't live in Sanibel, in your entire life, and you've been out on the beach 5 minutes.
And you took a shell tour? You took a shell tour?
Well, we took the shell, I wouldn't call it a tour, I'd call it a talk, the okay. shell talk.
Okay.
This little hotel we're staying at, brings in somebody from the National Shell Museum, which is 6 minutes from where we're staying, and they're marine biologists, young people. So Trish and I went to one on Sunday, and then Maya joined us yesterday, so Maya and I went this morning. The things you learn are just incredible. First of all, the beach is just two huge bands of shells in both directions. Above the tide line, or right at the tide line, above the water line, so much so that you can't. It's often hard to find a place to walk. That's how many shells there are. They're just shells everywhere. When somebody asked this morning a question that we didn't get a great answer to the last time, but this morning's woman was a little better on this topic. Why are there so many shells on Sanibel Island? Well, Sanibel Island is a little weird. It's a barrier island, so it's just like Miami Beach or Key Biscayne or the Outer Banks of North Carolina, but it sits perpendicular to the main coastline. Sanibel Island doesn't run north-south. It actually runs east-west. It sits in the stream of the water. So it catches shells that wouldn't normally wash up on the shore. And so literally, the shell offerings change with every single tide. And what do we learn? I think the most interesting thing we learned that I guess I never really appreciated is that mollusks, the mushy, the soft, squishy, muscular creatures that make shells, they're almost all carnivores. They eat each other. So you'll often find a little scallop shell or a clam shell sitting on the beach. That's, there's thousands of them every 6 feet that has a little hole in it. And I've always wondered where did the hole get worn there? That seems to have happened awfully quickly. No, the hole is from some other animal attaching itself to the top of the shell, drilling a hole with a toothed tongue, and then injecting paralytic poison into the creature that lives in that shell and then sucking the creature out. And as Trish said, looking at the beach after hearing this on Sunday, the whole place is just one big graveyard. So they eat each other. So that's really fascinating. I guess the other thing we learned that's amazing, there's lots of They're called Florida Fighting Conchs. They look just like conch shells, but they're really the size of your fist or smaller. The shell begins at the very top of the spiral, at the very tip top. The baby animals have a tiny little shell that looks exactly like the grown-up shell. And over the last 4 or 5 days, we've collected Florida fighting conch shells. One of them is the size of the fingernail on my little finger, then a little bigger, then a little bigger, then one, you know, more the size of my fist. And they just keep adding to the outer edge of the shell where it's open. That's where the growth.
Oh, the shell grows. They're not trading in. They don't go to a shell store, trade in their shell for a bigger shell. They grow the same shell over the course of its life.
Right. If the shell is empty, the creature that created it has died.
But the shell, if a shell is not empty, it's the same damn shell. They've had the whole, it's like my skin. It just grows with me.
Exactly. Since it was the tiny, you can see the original shell right at the top. And they just keep making it bigger as they themselves get bigger. Isn't that amazing?
And all these gazillions of shells are dead animals, basically. They're not dead animals, they're bones. Right. They're skeletons of, it makes it a little ghoulish, a little less beautiful, a little less, look at this beautiful shell.
It's not ghoulish the way you're thinking. Bones, our bones, even our teeth, were once alive.
Right.
The shell of a clam or an oyster or a conch or a whelk, the shell of the creature is different. It was never alive. It is literally just protection. And so the conch or the oyster makes the shell and constantly makes it bigger right at that leading edge or the outer edge of the clam or the oyster. But the shell itself was never alive. If we were hauling in the bones of dead creatures and displaying them, that would seem weird. But
you couldn't imagine walking along a beach filled with fish bones and thinking, isn't this beautiful?
Isn't this gorgeous, right?
Like, look at these. Right. Oh, so look at these bones. Look at these fish bones that I picked up here. Right.
But here's the other thing we learned. It's kind of amazing. Mollusks. That's the name of the actual animal inside these shells. There's 50,000 different species of mollusks.
Okay, like a snail is a mollusk. An oyster is a mollusk.
Right.
They're all
a mollusk.
Okay.
A conch is a mollusk. Right. They're okay. All right. And they are second in variety and abundance in the world, only to insects, arthropods. So as the shell guide on Sunday said, the shell and the 50,000 species, that's a sign of success. They win. They're doing well. They're doing much better than the mammals because the shell is taking care of them, and that's why there's 50,000 different kinds. So I thought that was kind of a nice way of thinking about it, too. Anyway, the other thing about Sanibel is that we're in Florida, man.
No one's wearing a mask. What's happening there? Do you have no COVID down there? What's the word?
COVID
free.
Crazy. No one wears masks.
Literally no one wears a mask. How about at your hotel? Do they wear masks at the hotel?
At the hotel, they are very careful. The front desk wears masks, and the housekeeping staff is all wearing masks. But now, Santa Ana is a tourist island, but it's not like Myrtle Beach. It's not like the coast of, Mississippi and Alabama, that coast, the Redneck Riviera. When they built the bridge to the island in 1973, the causeway, the government of the city of Sanibel, amazing, immediately imposed absolutely stringent zoning regulations. Can't build anything taller than two stories. This hotel has been here since 1895. They can do anything they want to their swimming pool as long as they don't change the shape or size of it ever.
Wow.
There's no sign.
They can't change the swimming pool.
They can't change the swimming pool. There's no signs anywhere. So when you're driving at night to protect the turtles, there's no light. There's no sign taller than me. And as you know, I am not NBA height. I'm a little less than NBA height. I'm 5'6". So you're looking for the place you want to eat dinner, or the Crab Shack. That's one of the places here.
What's interesting, though, is it's a tightly controlled place in a freewheeling state with no regulations whatsoever, right? It's a...
There are environmental rules. They're not what they used to be. But so when you walk into a restaurant, we ate outdoors last night. Nobody serving us at the restaurant was wearing a mask.
And do you know, by the way, does Disney still wear masks or not? Do you have to still, like, when we went?
I do not know what the rule. Disney imposed very stringent.
Yeah, when I went to Disney with Mom last February, whatever it was 100% masked. Like you know, you would be thrown into the pit of despair if you weren't wearing a mask.
Right. There are plenty of cast members around to enforce it. Face coverings are still required for all guests to and up in indoor locations, regardless of vaccination status.
It was indoor and outdoor when we were there. Okay, we'll get back to Omicron in a minute. Before I do that, I wanted to ask you, as we head into the new year,
Go ahead.
Job numbers.
I have a good Omicron score.
There were job numbers. We're going to come back to Omicron. There were job numbers released last Friday, maybe, and they were not good. What is happening?
Well, it was such a puzzling jobs report. You love the good news. Let's do the good news first.
I love good news. Yeah.
The unemployment rate is down to 3.9%. In normal times, in traditional times, that would be considered essentially full employment. We kind of assume that about somewhere between 3.5% and 4% of people are kind of turning over at any given moment. They've quit, they don't like their job, they want a different job, they're moving, their spouse is moving, or they were fired because they're doing a bad job. 3.9% unemployment is great. The odd thing on Friday was the announcement of how many new jobs had been created in December. And every month for all this data, the big financial news outlets poll economists and observers, analysts at the brokerage houses and stuff like that. The Wall Street Journal does it. CNBC does it. The consensus was that there would be 450,000 new jobs in December, and there were whisper numbers like, it could be 800,000. It's going to be huge. And it came in at 199,000, less than half of what economists expected. And everybody was sort of baffled by that. That number was measured. They know the week in each month when the number's measured. It was measured before Omicron really took hold. So lowest unemployment rate going all the way back into the Trump administration, great unemployment numbers, but not many new jobs. What was that about? And basically the observers just shrugged and said, we don't know. But what has happened in the last year is that the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the federal government, which measures all this stuff with incredible care, they go back and revise their numbers. A month and 2 months later, they go back in December and they release fresh November numbers based on more detailed polling. And they've been going up 50 and 100,000 a month. So the best idea is that employers aren't really reporting accurately what's happening, or they don't have time to respond to the survey, and we're missing.
I thought there was some sense that maybe the new jobs aren't there because there's no one to fill them. Like the number is people hired into new jobs, right? Isn't there some sense that there's no?
Well, there's two different numbers. And to be honest, I'm going to admit here, I don't quite understand the distinction. The 200,000 from last Friday is new jobs. People hired into jobs, people newly hired, is separately measured. So they're overlapping, but they're kind of different.
I see.
We had a job. It was open. Then we filled it. That's a different category than 200,000 new jobs is job creation. New jobs that didn't exist in November that were created in December. Remember, there are 11 million jobs advertised right now in the United States of America that employers want to fill that no one will take the job. That's incredible. The economy is, Omicron and everything else withstanding, the economy is really blazing right now. It is chugging along. Imagine if we could fill a quarter of those.
Well, and that's the fundamental issue, right? You have what percentage of people quit their jobs last year? And right now, whether it's airlines, restaurants, FedEx, it's hard to find. That is the phenomenon that's happening right now. Hard to find people to do the work, right?
It is hard to find people to fill these open jobs. And it is, and if you're looking for a job, you kind of have your choice. And that's, in some ways, that's great news, right? In some ways, that's really good news. It gives, you and I talk about this a lot. Corporate profits have doubled in the last 20, 25 years. Not the actual profits, the rate of profitability from 6% to 12%. Every year they make more, and they make more as a percent as well. And wages for wage-earning Americans, they're exactly the same as they were in 1974. So it's kind of nice. People talk about, oh, my God, the wage increases aren't keeping up with the crazy Biden inflation. You know what? The wage increases are doing a lot better job of keeping up with inflation right now than they were in 2008. In 2010 and 2014 and 2017 in the Obama and Biden administrations, when inflation was low at 2%, but you were lucky to get a 1% raise out of your boss. So it's nice to see wages rising at this moment.
All right. And then what is Omicron it's an interesting phenomenon now because it's going crazy. And yet there's also this perception that as long as you're vaccinated, you're unlikely to be seriously ill.
Okay, let me give you the best Omicron news. I found another place named Omicron right here in Southwest Florida.
Okay, great.
Omicron, tile, and granite.
Okay.
Omicron, tile, and granite. There's a chain of 17 stores. I called. I swallowed hard. And I called them this morning and did the same thing I did at the restaurant. Hi, I'm a crazy reporter. Sorry to bother you. And she said the company's 20 years old. She doesn't know how it got the name Omicron. That would have been something the owner did, but he was not in the store at that moment. It's not hurting business. But most important, she said, it doesn't matter because we were bought by a company called Caesarstone. I said, Caesar, tell me what that word is. She said, Caesar like the salad. She said, so it's all done. Except the sign.
So Omicron is gone. Omicron is gone. So there you go.
It's about to be gone.
Headline. Omicron
seems
is
like
gone.
The signs would be important at this moment.
No. Yeah.
Look, somebody put it really beautifully, and I just keep repeating this, and I think it's really it's an important way of thinking about it. Omicron is low risk to you individually. I think we talked about this last week. If you've been vaccinated and boosted, Omicron is low risk to you, but it is turning out to be devastating to society. United Airlines announced yesterday in a system-wide memo that they are canceling 3,000 flights going forward because of absenteeism. And the CEO said, as an example, last week in Newark, one-third of the people assigned to our Newark base called in sick. He said, actually, they called out sick. Never gotten used to that phrase, but that's the new phrase, calling out sick. There was a call yesterday of 27 grocers and food retailers, and in that call, it was revealed that among those 27 very large companies, more staff members, more employees have called in sick to those grocers and food companies in the last 2 weeks than in all of 2020, the first year of the pandemic. In the last 2 weeks, more ill employees than in the first year of the pandemic. So what that tells you is Omicron is crazy. It's crazy infectious, and it is crippling systems and the economy. Now, of course, the really bad news this morning is that there are more people in the hospital.
Let me get to the hospital in just a minute. Because that might be part of the answer to this. Is it partly crippling the economy because people are overreacting to Omicron? In other words, when Fauci and the whatever said 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, hey, if you're exposed, just hang out for 5 days, don't get tested, and then come back, because we don't need to be out any longer than that. Like, we can't grind to a halt. Isn't that, in fact, the rational response to it? If you're saying it is small threat individually, big threat crippling to the economy, isn't the answer to not then overreact when you have it? Just get back to work, damn it.
Well, there is, look, I'm not a doctor or an owner of a grocer or a epidemiologist. There's huge controversy over that. The American Medical Association, the American Nurses Association, the Flight Attendants Association all came out with scorching denunciations of that policy. In California, they're sending people who are COVID positive back to work into the hospitals where they work. That seems a little crazy, but it's a sign of desperation. Listen, deaths are up nonstop since Thanksgiving. They've done nothing but rise. They're at 1,600 a day. If you haven't been vaccinated, you are,
you're out of your mind.
You're out of your mind, but you're 13 times more likely to die. In those 1,600 people dying every day, 13 non-vaccinated for every one vaccinated. That's the numbers. So the way to protect yourself, both from the virus, but just as important from being really sick and dying, get vaxxed, get boosted. Go get your booster right now. It's free, it's easy.
You don't want to end up a shell of your former self.
You don't want to end up former self.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it. He's on Twitter, at C. Fishman. You can follow him there on vacation in Sanibel Island. Hey, Jeffrey, what's coming up next?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeffers is coming up next on Jason and John. They're live and in studio. Trey Wingo joins us on Giannotto and Jeffrey at 2:40. Jeff joins GP at 5 o'clock. Pre-game for Grizzlies and Warriors tonight, 6:30. Tip-off will be at 7 o'clock right here
at 99. Big game tonight. We will be back to talk about it tomorrow. For now, our work is done.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.